I saw a Chippendale midget do a strip tease for my wife.
Listen.
And I'm the one that needs to get out and live a little more. Well,
hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman. And you got... Made sure you got me with food in my mouth so I couldn't say anything.
That's exactly right. If you want to know why I'm out to get Mark this episode, go back and listen to the episode entitled The One Where We Left Him Wanting More.
You did.
So, as you know, today we're going to, because we didn't get to them all last time, we're going to continue talking about matches you need to watch from 1992. But before we do, we got a new segment called Marking Out with Mark. And this is where I should probably insert some fancy, we're marking out with Marky Mark. Marking out with Marky Mark.
Yeah, we need to make a song.
I just made a song. That was the song.
That's the song you're going to do that for
now. So this question also comes from Scott Hicks. He submitted... multiple questions. Mm-hmm. The question he wants you to answer this week, Hornswoggle or Heath?
You mean in a real fight?
In a wrestling match.
In a wrestling match? Well, you're both about the same size. Both got that prominent forehead. Yeah, probably Hornswoggle.
Hey, people may not agree with this. When Hornswoggle and El Torito did that TLC match, mm-hmm. that was entertaining.
I've never seen it.
It might have been on the pre-show.
It was, and I just never got around to watching it.
And, I think we had some people over at the house watching, and it was, like I said, it was, they brought in, like, this miniature table and had the miniature ladder. I mean, like I said, it was entertaining.
I'll tell you, one of the best... many wrestlers that I ever saw was Masquerita Sagrada. And I'm going to talk about him, not in this episode, but a few episodes later.
Yeah.
So I will go into him. But, you know, I've actually been to midget wrestling twice.
In Atlanta?
No, I went in Clemson.
Because they have it in Atlanta, like regularly.
Yeah, I mean, they travel too, though. Mm-hmm. And I saw him in Atlanta, and then I saw him I saw him in Clemson.
Yeah.
My wife and I went and saw him. And then I saw them in at TJ Whispers in Anderson, and I went by myself and actually, like, went up afterwards and got to talking to him and had some drinks with some of the guys and sit around and talk about wrestling.
They set up a ring at TJ Whispers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was great. There was one guy – not at that one, at the one in Clemson, he did a Chippendales. He had worked with Chippendales at one point doing they use the word midget, not me. This is their word.
Right.
They said we're midgets. That's the way they talk about themselves.
Yeah.
So he was a little midget Chippendale dancer.
Yeah.
And he took my wife into the ring and he put one foot on each thigh and danced for her in the ring. It was great. It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. So,
I just want to say, I need to get you out living a little more.
Really? Do I need to be the one that gets out a little more?
If that's one of the greatest things you've ever seen, I guess you're right.
I saw a Chippendale midget do a strip tease for my wife.
Listen.
And I'm the one that needs to get out and live a little more. Well,
listen, no one knows more about the midget lifestyle than me. Maybe that's why I take it for granted.
That's true.
That stuff your, like that.
Your
happens.
Wife, your wife has a midget do a strip tease right. for her all the time.
Will you stop?
We don't need to go there.
We don't need to go there. Oh my goodness. So there you go. There's your answer. It's Hornswoggle. Hey, I'd put the guy over.
I'm sure that you would.
I'd put him over.
Did you ever see the Leprechaun Origins movie?
No, I just saw the original one that had Jennifer Aniston.
It is awful.
Oh, is that the one with Hornswoggle?
Yes, it's awful because I thought, as I'm sure everybody thought, because they bought the rights to that movie to put Hornswoggle in it as the Leprechaun.
Yeah.
And he's in it for, I don't know, maybe a minute. And he's not the leprechaun from the leprechaun movies. He's like a little creature.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you can't even tell it's him. There was no person that his, there's not right. his, that was what made the leprechaun movie so endearing with Warwick Davis's personality.
Yeah.
And Hornswoggle was just wearing a creature costume.
Yeah.
And it didn't even look like
he wasn't even the main creature.
Well, he was, but you didn't see him. They did the Jaws thing where you get hints that it worked for Jaws, but it doesn't work all the time.
Warwick Davis, underrated in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, he's good, man. He's really good. He was in, Willow?
He was in Willow. He played...
he was in the Harry Potter Wicked, movie.
The Ewok.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. He was in the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, I guess he was.
Which were a lot better than they should have been. But...
Yeah.
To me, I mean, I watched them all because my nephew wanted to watch them. And I remember I said to him about four movies in, I said, I think when it comes to Harry Potter and Voldemort, one of them scared and the other one's glad of it. Because if they wanted to fight that bad, it shouldn't have took them six or seven movies to get there.
Right. Well, hey, they probably
they had. Both wanted to fight. So go ahead and fight and get it over with.
See, that was good 80s wrestling booking. Two True. Guys, you tease it. And then people know it's coming.
Right.
But they'll sit through seven movies. Now, yeah, in today's wrestling, they would have fought in every movie.
Yeah, they would have been fighting the first 3 minutes into the movie with no reason why.
Yeah. So maybe like the opening movie. It
opens up with them having a battle.
Who is this guy? And yeah.
Why are they fighting each other?
Let's talk about some matches from 92. Where we know why the guys are fighting.
Okay.
As I was doing what I like to call research, Mark likes to call it Googling. In 1992, Ric Flair has left. He's left WCW, but he is still regarded as the NWA champion for a period of time. You get to August of 92, he is no longer the NWA champion. They're holding a tournament in Japan to crown a new champion. I believe it takes place over several days. And there's two matches that I want to talk about from this tournament that just one of them, to me, in my mind, would be a dream match. And the other one's a great match. But this first one I want to mention, and again, there'll be links to all of these in the show notes. The first one is, I do not pronounce Japanese names. I don't pronounce American names well.
Jeremy. Do you ever say anything to him about that?
I do. Now I overpronounce it.
Do you really? I haven't listened to the Groundswell show that much, but I've listened... I try to check it out. Tell everybody about that. You should. I mean, you never plug Groundswell.
Well, they're not going to let me plug the Double Dropkick show.
Over. I don't care.
I do. So, I am a pastor. And so me and one of my buddies from Wesleyan headquarters, we just interview different people about different stuff in the church. I really enjoy doing it. I kind of got that gig because of some other podcasts that I've done. But really... applied a lot of the principles you and I learned from this show, trial and error, and the technical aspect of it. And, of course, with it, Groundswell is completely different because we
you're not working with a heathen.
but we have a time, but we kind of set a time limit of, okay.
I got you.
This
I
is.
Got you. Yeah, I noticed they're all really short.
And the goal with that was, it's meant to be, to be totally honest, it was... That's kind of what I wanted it to be because I knew this show, we don't have a time limit. This is
free form as it gets.
That's exactly right. And I really, to be honest, wanted to do something different. So, okay, what if we do put a time limit and it's geared toward this is, you're going to listen to this in one commute, whereas our show, it takes me about four commutes.
Right.
But it's totally different. Totally different. Yeah. That's an interview-based show. You know, we don't do – well, a lot of times I'm just interviewing you and then telling you – giving. I'll interview, ask you a question, then I'll give you the answer.
Yeah, that's right. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to tell people where they can hear.
I appreciate that.
Some people like you and they don't like me. And
so if you go
maybe
to,
they're looking for some spiritual stuff.
So the website is missionaldiscipleship.com, and you go on there and it's got the episodes for that, and then also you know, just different articles about, you know, Christianity and discipleship, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun, you know. Jeremy's a guy that, you know, he's written several books. He's a guy that I have a huge amount of respect for. His birthday, we're recording this on I don't even know what day it is. My birthday is in 2 days. It's April the 16th, and so yesterday was Jeremy's birthday, so this is probably airing in July. So, Jeremy, yeah. Happy birthday.
And by the way, I feel bad I can't come to your birthday party.
That's all right. Hey,
I know I've talked to you about it. I have to work. I mean, there's nothing I can do about that.
Listen, if you'll go on the 25th to this new wrestling company, their first show, if we can work that out.
If I'm off, yeah, I'll go.
So, yeah. All right.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean. It's just
fine.
Something you said sparked the idea to me that this is not the only podcast you do, and I just figured.
Yeah, and to be
some
honest,
people may want to interested in listening to that.
And to be honest, like one of my goals, you know, that I am working toward is like I want to host multiple podcasts on a variety of subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I just like podcasts. I like talking to people. I like interviewing people. So that's neither. There you go. So my goal for my next 40 years is to podcast more.
There you go.
More and eat a little less. But one of the matches from this 92, this NWA World Title Tournament, is Kaiji Muto versus Steve Austin. Now, I don't know what episode. It was probably back in the first episode where we talked about matches you haven't seen. And I'm not going to rehash it. Mark gives a great history of great Muta, a.k.a. Kaiji Muto.
Or Kiji, some people.
Kiji, Kaiji. Mark, can you, in three sentences, just briefly sum that up, the difference in those two personas?
Kiji Muto is one of the greatest technical wrestlers in the history of Japanese wrestling. He's a legend. Just a phenomenal worker, but very much white meat.
Yeah, white meat babyface.
The polar opposite is when you piss him off and he turns into the great Muta, who everybody knows from the JTEX Corporation with Terry Funk. Gary Hart had that great feud with Sting and Muta, or with Sting and Flair. But completely exist completely opposite of one another. And they are, one is the Democrat to the Republican.
Right.
One is this incredible technical wrestler. One is this incredible brawler.
Yeah.
But everything he does is both guys has a real crisp, sharp, but he has different move sets.
Right.
He carries himself different. It is the equivalent of Mick Foley doing Cactus Jack, Dude Love, Mankind, Commissioner Foley, where he's got these different personalities, but they exist separately from one another.
Yeah. And as Muto, he wears regular wrestling gear. And as
Muto, he just wears a pair of trunks.
He's got the painted face. And
he actually wears a mask now.
Yeah, yeah. So let me.
Was a different guy who played Muto for a while.
Okay.
I forget who it was, but for a while it was. There was another guy under the mask doing the character, I think. I could be wrong about that, but...
No. Don't even hint that that's even a possibility.
But they, if I'm not mistaken, led to a deal where they faced one another. And that's where it went.
So I just wonder, this is not from Wrestling Observer. This is just from different places I found. But I just found this paragraph interesting and it kind of sums up some stuff. In the time period being looked at here, Muto was an athletic wrestler who could work on the mat and fly through the air. And he had many great wrestling matches. Great Muta wanted to stab your eyeball out with a screwdriver. After that, he wanted to pile drive you through a table. Finally, he wanted to gnaw on the ropes a little. And that's pretty much.
That's it. Yeah, that sums it up better than I did, probably.
And there's, I was reading about this, and there's actually, they do an NWO in Japan mm-hmm. where Muta's in one and Muto is yeah. in the other. And mm-hmm. so, like, but they again, they almost, it's just amazing.
Now he's with the Hustle Wrestling.
Okay.
He's got his Hustle, and they did a deal. And I've seen the start. I didn't watch the whole angle unfold. Mm-hmm. But this guy was getting picked on, and he was a real nerdy guy, and he had a bottle, and he like a genie in a bottle.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, I've got somebody that's going to come help me, and this and that and the other. And he's fighting this other faction, and he's got nothing. I mean, he's yeah. like you. He's as nerdy as they get.
Right.
But he goes through the deal, and he rubs the lamp, and there's stuff, and the smoke goes off, and then Muta appears on the stage to assist him. And Muda's not this guy's friend.
Right.
He just conjured Muta up.
Ah.
So then they go to the ring, and Muta destroys these other people.
Yeah.
But he's like, very much, I'm going to destroy them because you conjured me up. But he sells it. Don't mistake the fact that I'm not your friend.
Yeah.
Because I will kill you if you get close to me.
And he does all that without saying a word.
Right. He does this all with body language and yeah. expressions. And then he sprays the green mist on the woman's below her belt. And they did a storyline where it impregnated her.
Jimmy,
she had
Cricket.
This sumo baby that was born full sumo sized. And then they did. There's this family dynamic of now he's got to be the father to this sumo wrestler. Yeah, it's a very weird. It's like an idea. What if we introduced some American storytelling into our Japanese wrestling? It's a weird thing that they got going on in the Hustle promotion, but Hustle One, maybe I think that's the. Anyway,
thing.
Now you started talking about it, and I took it away.
No,
now you know how I felt when we did those shows about WWE.
Hey, I teed it up for you. So this is I picked this match because it's just something I've never seen before. And it's weird because it's got a big match feel, big crowd, but they get ready to wrestle, and they shake hands, which is like Steve Austin shaking a guy's hand. But then you look in the crowd. And there's on like the front row, you see Dusty Rhodes. I'm pretty sure Bill Watts, Hiro Matsuda.
Yeah, at the time, yeah.
So it's like, oh, this is. It just feels like a big deal. The match started. A lot of the matches I picked as I watched them, they're basic wrestling matches.
Yeah.
That if they did these today, do you know what, people would chant boring?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But you go back and it is a good match. This is not a great match. Matter of fact, if you read, they had a series of three matches and none of them are great.
No, they're
this
not great.
This is probably
matches.
The worst of the three.
I actually had them on VHS back then and was disappointed in them.
Yeah, right. Like, but for me,
because
this is something you don't see every day.
I'm a huge Muta fan.
Yeah.
You know that. I'm a huge Kiji Muto fan.
Yeah.
And I'm I was a Stunning Steve fan.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed. I'll tell you another disappointing match.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Ricky Steamboat and the Great Muta. And I said, wow, that's going to be something to see. And I got the tape, and when I watched it, I was just like, man, you know.
Where, was it in America or Japan?
No, it happened in Japan. It's on YouTube. I mean, you can find it on YouTube. And it's a good, it's like you're talking about, a good match, but it's just not, it's not what you think it's going to be. I thought, man, these guys, Ricky Steamboat, Great Muta, about the same size. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be this incredible match. And they fought in the U.S. too, don't get me wrong, but I thought, in Japan, they would really go for it.
Yeah.
And I just, it was kind of
held something back a little bit.
But I tell you, if you want to see a good Ricky Steamboat in Japan match, there's a match on YouTube where he takes on Jimmy Snuka back in the 80s. And it is an incredible match. And Ricky Steamboat plays the heel in the match. So if you've never seen the Ricky Steamboat Jimmy Snuka match from Japan, definitely go. That's an incredible match, and you get to see how Steam, and he would have been a good heel.
Hey,
that's always the knock on him, that he never worked heel. But when you watch that match, you'll realize how he's great at everything he did, so he would have been a great heel.
Hey, let's, I say in a future episode, we do a voiceover of that match.
Okay.
the Steamboat Snooker match. I think that'd be fun. Fun to watch. I just want to go through all this is in. Matter of fact, this match on YouTube, or it's on Daily Motion. I can't remember if it has commentary or not.
Probably not. If it was in Japan, it was probably Japanese commentary.
Well, no, but this, I can't remember. But you hear the crowd, and the crowd's just weird, but it sounds like they're doing a what chant.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're saying. They're not saying what.
Right.
But it's just, they keep saying this one word, and it's just weird. Muta pulls out a move that, I'll be honest, thought was a recent invention, and that's the last chantry, where you get the guy's leg locked and you bridge backwards and then pull up on his chin. Austin Aries does it, but Muto does this move to Steve Austin, and it's a pretty incredible move. They go out the outside the ring, and Muta does his handspring, and Austin moves, and Muta goes into the guardrail. Great.
Yeah.
Great spot.
The guardrail spot's always big in Japan, and now they do they have the 20 count.
Right.
In Japan. And
get out there and take your time.
And it's been overdone now. They do the 19 count, where both guys are fighting intensely outside the ring, and then they get to 19, and they both dive back in the ring.
Yeah.
It's a big spot in Japan. But it's kind of like the over-the-top rope dives here in America. Right. It's been done so much that it's not as cool as it used to be.
Yeah.
I don't know that they – I'm not saying they did that spot, but they do the guardrail spot a lot in Japan.
They should save any dive. I remember when Sting did it at that Clash of the Champions in 88.
Yeah.
Just nobody had ever seen
it. Yeah, I don't think they need to do dives every match on Raw.
No,
that to me should be. I heard Superstar Billy Graham on Jim Ross's podcast the other day. He said those guys will take more bumps over the course of a Monday Night Raw than I probably took in my entire career.
Yeah,
and that's why a lot of those guys had these extended careers, and that's why you see Daniel Bryan struggling with what he's struggling with right now. I mean, you just can't work that style forever.
Yeah,
they need to just. People, the problem is the fans won't accept it if they tone their style down.
That's right. So, that's right. If you gave the fans this Muto Austin match, which is a perfectly acceptable match.
Oh, yeah, it's a good match.
It's not a pay per view main event quality, but it's a good match, two guys.
Yeah, it's a good 20 minute time killer.
But the fans would crap on it.
Yeah, because there's nothing, you know.
Now, the ending is bizarre.
Yeah.
Austin goes up top. I don't know if he was doing a frog splash or a headbutt or what, but he misses. And Muta's going to try to moonsault real quick, and it goes off the rails. Like, he doesn't even get to the top rope. He slips, crotches himself, and just falls to the outside.
Yeah.
And you kind of see Austin in the ring. He's like, oh, crap. But he... Austin does great. He goes out and attacks Muta outside, brings him back in, acts like he's going to pile drive him. Muta backdrops him and then does the moonsault and 1-2-3. Muta moves on in this tournament. But again, I had never seen these two guys wrestle. Didn't even know that was there. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
All right. Now, the second match I wanted to throw out from that same tournament is this was actually the finals of that tournament. And it's Rick Rude against Masahiro Chono. This is actually 2 days later. August the 12th, 1992. This is a great match.
Uh-huh.
This and the cool thing about this match, it has a big fight feel to it that very few matches today. Rude versus Chono was not a match you were getting every Monday night.
Right.
You hadn't seen it 100 times. And they're fighting over what at that point still they're trying to keep. The NWA title still has some pull back at this point.
It was still prestigious. Yeah.
And it's just I had never seen Rude in this. I mean, I've got to go watch more Rick Rude matches, because this whole portion of his career, when he had a tremendous run in WCW, I missed all that.
Right.
And I am a huge Rick Rude fan. During Black History Month, you know, they posted these random episodes of Mid-South and Mid-Atlantic on the network. And one of the Mid-South episodes is Rick Rude and another jobber. And it's Rick Rude as a jobber, and he's just wearing blue trunks. And he looks about as awkward. I mean, he's got he's not Rick Rude. I mean, that's his name's like right. Richard Rude or something. But they're wrestling Road Warriors,
right?
Who he grew up with, you know, in Minneapolis.
It's a lot of Apolises.
It is
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. Yeah. Is it Minnea? Is it Minneapolis?
I think it's Minneapolis. Say now, I can't. Now you got me messed up.
The North.
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. that's like that when the Final Four was in Indianapolis and they did the commercial with Charles Barkley. They go to Annapolis, Maryland. And he's like, we are. We're in the Annapolis. And they're like, no, Indianapolis. I guess it was funny when I watched it.
Must have been. Why don't you leave the comedy to me? It ain't as easy as it looks.
All your comedy is at my expense. Yeah,
but at least it's funny.
Listen, no one makes a better butt of the joke other than me.
Yes, I'm aware. Well, comedy ain't as easy as it looks.
But again, this is a. I said all that to say that. Rick Rude is just great. I mean, and
stellar commentary,
but,
my friend.
But I guess the style of this match, again, it's a Japanese match. It's not the typical you know, what you would see in American TV. And then once Chono wins at the end, it's a big fight feel. They do this big presentation, which they always kind of do in Japan. But if you have not seen this match and you have not seen Chono win the NWA title.
Oh, yeah. It's good, man. And Chono, he was really, really good. I was never a big fan of his.
Right.
But he was good, man. That Yakuza kick is brutal looking.
Right.
His finisher where he kicks the guy in the face.
Right.
They call it the Mafia kick here. It was the Yakuza kick there. That was a great finish. And everything he did was believable. And he's a lot bigger than a lot of the other Japanese guys. So it, you know, at least he seems to be anyway.
Right.
He's a lot thicker than most.
While we're talking about Chono, if I may.
Are you going to do it anyway?
Can I talk about my next match? Because it ties in. Because I've talked
Why would you let me talk? Sure.
Because I've talked about Muda and I've talked about Chono, and now I've got a Juice and Thunder Liger Listen, match.
Job guys always go on first, so go ahead.
Well, thank you. So the next match I want to throw out, because Mark did not do the required five matches, so I'll carry.
Well, you don't know how many matches I got. You ain't let me talk yet.
Well, I know, because all mine are tied together. So just let me finish this
one. I got some New Japan stuff, too.
this next match I want to throw out, spoiler alert, I did go to Pro Fight Database, and this was the Wrestling Observer Match of the Year from April 30th.
Big surprise. I bet you from 92, 93, and 94, you got something that Wrestling Observer voted the best of something for that year.
Yeah, and you would be correct. It's Jushin Thunder Liger and El Samurai. This is the finals of the top of the Super Junior tournament, which I think we've talked about other matches from this tournament. Now, here are some things I want to talk about Liger. Mark got to tell you the story about Great Muda. I want to tell you some stuff on Liger.
He was based on an anime character, right?
He was. That's not what I'm going to say.
Sucks when somebody does that to you, don't it?
There's another.
I didn't have to Google that.
See, Jushin Liger is based on an anime character,
right?
And as the anime character changed,
he
powered up.
Yeah,
and he became Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, I didn't have to Google that.
But in high school.
You and him are about the same height.
No, he is. He is that
much. Y'all actually are pretty. Probably.
Speaking of height, You're getting ahead of my story here.
I know. I'm doing it on purpose because you did it to me while we did those last series of stories.
Jushin Liger in high school made it to the national finals in Japan of the wrestling tournament and lost to Kawada, who also became a Japanese wrestling sensation. So Jushin Liger, that's obviously not his real name. Really, yeah. So he wants to go to the New Japan Dojo, does not meet the height requirement.
Right.
And so he decides to go to Mexico, and you know, working in Mexico, some of the New Japan guys are over there, see him, and they're like, hey, you know, you're actually really good. We do want you to come to the dojo. But that class that he was in, people talk about the class of Batista, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Randy Orton, of how that period of OVW was so good. You had Muto, Chono, Hashimoto, and Jushin Liger, who really carried New Japan for 10, 15 years. Great superstars over there, Nostradamus. I saw that. But this was like a really cool thing. And as I was looking at these different matches, I haven't watched it yet. Jushin Liger versus Randy Savage from 1996. Have you seen that match?
I have not, I don't think.
So I just, again, that was what I wanted to do, and it's like really cool things I hadn't seen. So if you haven't seen Samurai Wrestle, we watched some of his other matches. During this match, kind of halfway, not even halfway through, Samurai's just trying to unmask Liger.
Uh-huh.
Which, if you've heard us talk about the Liger Muta match,
yeah, I was going to mention that.
You don't want to unmask.
No, because he'll try to stab you with a screwdriver.
He will. But Liger does unmask Samurai, which is not unusual, except he just leaves his mask dangling around his neck.
Yeah,
the rest of the match, he doesn't take it off, and it just looks awkward the whole match. But it does help as far as the storytelling of the match. It just adds this other element. I mean, it's these guys. I mean, if you've seen a Liger match, I mean, this is definitely one of his best. And it ends weird. I mean, it doesn't end weird. He does a Frankensteiner off the top to pin him, but then he doesn't even cover him. He just lays back on him.
Yeah.
I mean, just to kind of sell, this has been such an exhausting match. And I don't know if you know this. El Samurai means the samurai.
Thanks there, Chris Farley. I am the great El Nino. El Nino is Spanish for the Nino.
All the other tropical storms bow down to me.
Well, since you're talking about New Japan, I'll skip ahead a little bit. I've mentioned it before. I just think it's a very important match that people need to see, the Great Muta versus Hiroshi Hase. It's the from New Japan Final Battle 92, and at the time it was considered, and it's still considered, but there have been different matches since then that have kind of raised the bar. It was the bloodiest match in the history of professional wrestling, and it established what would become known as the Muta scale.
Right.
When you would discuss the amount of blood that got lost in a match, how would it rank on the Muta scale? Whereas, you know, if it's a one, then it's full on bloody, just as Muta. If it's a negative, there's no blood, you know, so whatever. I just think that people need to check out Hiroshi Hase versus Great Muta. First of all, it's an incredible match.
What card did you say it was from?
It's from the New Japan Final Battle, okay. 92. And Muta bleeds a bucket of blood. He gets jabbed in the head with some instrument they got, some hunk of metal, you know what I mean? He just jabs him in the head with this thing, and it's just gushing. And it covers the mat. It covers Muta. Covers Hase. Everybody's got, the referee's got blood on him. He's, Muta at one point, how he breathes the mist, he's breathing and he's blowing blood out. It's just, if you like bloody matches, this is a match for you. I tried to not just pick matches that were one way or the other. I picked a bunch. Some of them I don't even have notes on, and it sucks because I forgot there's a match that I really wanted to talk about, and I can't remember what it is. Because there's a great spot where two guys do a suplex from in the ring out of the ring.
Oh, wow.
And I cannot find where I've taken that note. I was looking for it a minute ago because I really wanted to talk about it. But they didn't do the spot where one guy's in the ring and one guy's outside. They were both in the ring and did a suplex over the top rope. Cannot find it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I can't talk about the stuff I don't have written down.
Muto and Hase. So
Muto and Hase.
So who goes over?
Muta, obviously. And then another match in Japan. So this is one of those matches that I'm going to talk about. Somebody's going to watch it and say, man, I was really expecting there to be a lot more to it.
Mm-hmm.
The match is a minute long.
Okay.
Okay. At Tsuchi Onita and Tarzan Goto taking on the original fire-breathing Sheik and his nephew Sabu in Japan in a hellfire death match where they've taken and put barbed wire up around the ring. And then they have these ropes strung out and they've taken petrol fuel and dipped rags down in it and wrapped that around the ropes. And as the Sheik and everybody get into the ring, the Sheik, he's known for fire. So he comes out with a torch and he's like, he would lick the fire where he would take the fire and run it up his body. He played a lot with fire. He was the original guy to bring a snake to the ring.
Yeah.
If you've never watched the Sheik do his thing, he was truly an innovator.
Yeah.
Truly ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Ran big time wrestling in Detroit. Bloody, one of the only promotions ever that was built around the heel running the baby face out of town.
Right.
Probably the only promotion ever whose gimmick was he was the big heel and the baby faces would show up to conquer him and he would run them out of town.
And didn't you say somebody said, you know, now he's sitting in this big house.
Well, now he's dead. Yeah. But he didn't change his booking style. And that was, and it's what we talk about with Vince McMahon is if you keep doing what you've always done,
right,
and you never kind of change with the times because times are different now and people expect different things from wrestling. So if you don't change with the times, then the times will pass you by. And that's what happened with the Sheik. He used the money that he made from big time wrestling to buy the biggest house on the biggest side of town. And then he didn't change his booking philosophy to the point where he couldn't afford to keep the lights on in that big mansion.
Can I ask you what you said something that sparked something in my mind?
Okay.
You said, if you don't change with the times and give people what they want. So here's the question I have for you. It is widely known that the internet wrestling community is very disappointed with the WWE product right now. But would you say, because I think I would, that the product we are given now is the product that we asked for 10 years ago. And they gave it to us, but they've given it to us so much, or not me in particular, but some people.
What do you think we asked for? First of all,
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about, excuse me, definitely not we.
Well, because first of all, the internet wrestling community is everybody who's a wrestling fan. I don't really care for that term. Everybody
can we come up with a term for them that doesn't include us?
I don't care.
I would like to.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to put, I just call them jerks.
Yeah.
But they're miserable people.
They're hipsters, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got a picture I got to send you.
Okay.
I think it's an old woman wearing a shirt that says death to hipsters. But, yeah, I mean, but
like, that's kind of what that is, man. They, no matter what it is, they're not going to be happy.
That's right.
They're whether the it's people
music
that,
or movies.
Right.
Or,
they don't like Nickelback. They don't. And it's not enough that they don't like Nickelback. They need to tell you that they don't like Nickelback.
Right.
And somebody's buying all them Nickelback albums.
Right.
Okay, so I ain't a Nickelback fan either, but I just don't listen to them.
Right.
But there are people in this world, it's not enough for them to not listen to a band they don't like. They need to make sure that you understand that they don't like that band.
Yeah.
I don't, and it's the same with, like, I'll just say it, people who are racists,
right,
and people who are homophobics,
right.
I ain't got time in my life to make hating another man or another woman a hobby of mine.
Right.
I just ain't got enough time.
Right.
I got other things going on. Why would I hate somebody for what color they are or who they want to marry? I got my own life to live.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You do whatever makes, as long as you don't infringe upon my rights,
right,
I won't infringe upon yours.
And, then,
but the point is not to compare serious social, right, and economic issues to wrestling, but I just don't care enough about some of these things to make it. If I don't like Raw, I just don't watch it.
Right. But it's like hate. I mean, it's the old ad. Hate consumes you, and it makes you a miserable person.
It does.
So people who are
homeless, it really does.
Or, and I'm talking about people who are bullying. I'm not talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, right.
There are people who are who don't agree with that lifestyle, but who do it in a
personal, private way.
Right, right.
I know. I may not agree with how you live your life, but I'm not going to tell you how you should live your life. I'm going to focus on living my life the way I feel like I should live my life. That's, I got no problem with those people.
Right. But like,
and I don't think that rational thinking homosexuals have a problem with those people.
Right.
Because I have some gay friends.
Right.
And we talk about these things. They don't care if you don't agree with how they live. Just don't feel like you need to tell them that God hates them.
Right.
I don't know. I don't want us to get off on a big thing here.
Right.
But you just can't go. God don't hate anybody. If you, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
I mean, if I'm wrong, then I've missed the entire point of your entire religion.
Right.
If God hates people, then I've missed the point of the religion that you preach for.
Right.
Because I think that's what I've always understood. It was that he loved us.
Right. God does. He hates sin. And that's where
okay.
The conversation gets.
Well, let me just stop you right there. That hiding behind, I don't hate sinners, I hate sin, that's not for people on earth to do.
No, right, right. Love, you know, is, love. That, is
you can't,
like
you to, can't say, "Oh, I'm this big Christian," and but I hate the sin that this. You don't work that way. It's not your responsibility to go around hating anything.
Right, and so I, but I think that the way that God feels about things, that, you know, God is, you know, perfect. He is this perfect love. So he's able to balance that. He hates sin. He hates what sin does to us. And yet he loves us. He loves everybody. And he wants everybody to come to know him. And his whole deal is he wants to free us from these chains of sin. And I think for me as a human, to me, I do think good gravy, the love the sinner, hate the sin. It's a cop out. A lot of people use.
Yes.
To
justify the hatred that they have in their own heart.
But I do.
And I firmly believe that most of the men that go around spouting off how much they hate gay people, it's because they got some unfulfilled lust in their heart.
Well,
I'll say it, and I don't have a problem saying it.
But I do think that there are times that I am able to hate what people have done. I've hate their behavior. I have hated my behavior toward other people.
Right.
But still, I can hate what they do, but it does not affect my relationship. And they know where I stand with what they do. And I'm not even talking about homosexuality.
Right. We can be talking about gluttony or
talking about other things. So how in the
I don't know. But you know what? This another, like the last episode was very organic with the laughing.
No.
For those that have never heard us have our conversations off the air.
Right. This
often happens.
Right.
Because Heath and I don't necessarily agree on all subjects when it comes to religion. We have, but we are still friends.
Yeah. And
that's the point. You can in life have a disagreement with somebody and share different opinions,
right?
But that don't mean I love Heath any less, or that he loves me any less.
And Mark asked me some very, he asked me very challenging questions, not to make me, and correct me if I'm wrong, sir, please. He asked me those questions not to get me to doubt what I believe.
No, never.
But he has, let me tell you, there's been times, you know, we'll get done record about 4 o'clock, and from 4 to 7, I am digging deep mentally and thinking about some of our conversations. Because, like, I look at, like, yeah, I mean, he has helped me kind of formulate, okay, well, maybe my thinking is wrong on this, but
please don't allow me to ever alter your.
But also, I don't. Matter of fact, I'll say this: I don't preach it, Mark.
No,
and probably too far the other way. Like there are probably something. I mean, listen again. Mark, you hit me with a steel chair when we get done recording this episode. And you know what? In 2 weeks, I'm going to show up for breakfast and we're going to record this show again. Because we just, listen, we're both about turning 40 this year. We've been friends for 35 of those 40 years.
Yeah, pretty close.
So there you go.
And this is what happens when we have conversations. Occasionally we get sidetracked.
Yeah.
So if we bored you or offended you or whatever, I ask you this question. Did you click on a banner? And if the answer to that question is yes, then feel free to let us know that we shouldn't have talked about what we just talked about. If you ain't ever clicked on a banner or given me any money and you don't like what we're talking about, then turn it off and go listen to something else, because right. I don't care.
Right, right. Listen, there's plenty of podcasts that'll give you a 3-hour review of a 3-hour Raw when you already know what you know, was like.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I listen to people. I like Bruce Mitchell, and I like Jim Ross, and I even like Steve Austin.
Yeah.
I like guys who maybe are Jim Cornette, who are giving me information that I may not have known.
Right.
Okay. They give me an interview with superstar Billy Graham because I'm a superstar Billy Graham fan, but I don't know a whole lot about his backstory.
That's exactly.
They give me Jim Cornette gives me a great history lesson on Memphis wrestling, our own wrestling in Quebec. I mean, he has all kind of historic. I listen to that. I don't listen to another man telling me what I ought to think about anything. Nobody tells Mark Whitman what he needs to think about anything.
Right.
I don't need nobody to amen what I think about nothing. I don't need nobody to agree with what I say about nothing. Right. And I don't need nobody to tell me what I need to think about nothing. I know what I think about it.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you like it or you don't.
And our goal is not to convince you about matches you have seen. One of our goals for this show, I didn't know before this week that Kaiji Muto and Steve Austin wrestled.
Really?
Didn't know those two guys had ever been in the ring together. So for me, that's what I want the show to be. For somebody to listen, it's like, huh? Those guys wrestled? You mean there's a Muto scale? You know,
right.
That's what. So that's what I care about. We're not trying to convince you this is a great match. We're just saying, hey, check it out. When Raw is terrible, as you know it's going to be.
Right.
You don't need us to tell you it's terrible. You got two eyes, you moron.
Speaking of,
yeah.
Take 2 minutes of your life, go on YouTube, look up Onita and Goto versus the Sheik and Sabu, and watch them get in the ring and set it on fire, and watch the oxygen get sucked out of that ring.
Yeah.
And watch that fire get out of control, and watch those guys have to drop down and huddle up in the middle of the ring to try to keep
alive.
To try to stay alive, because when the fire gets out of control, it sucks all the oxygen out of the ring. And they have to drop down and roll out. And I think the Sheik actually had a lot of medical complications from this match.
Wow.
Because this fire, I mean, it gets out of control quick.
But once they set the fire, do they even do anything?
No, because the fire, these gasoline-soaked rags, we're not talking about wash rags. These things... they take the top rope and they put one that's about 3 foot long, right, and another one that's about 3 foot long. And then in the gap, they go down to the second rope and they put another one. So there's three rags that are about 3 foot long,
yeah,
on each side. And when they finally start to blaze, and this carrot, it must be kerosene because it didn't light fast enough to be gasoline.
Yeah.
Because it took it a minute to get going. But once it gets going, it's one of the scariest, intense things you'll ever see in your life. And you're going to watch it and say, wow, I thought it was going to be more than that. But imagine what it would be like to be standing in that ring,
yeah,
when it became engulfed in flames. And how scary. I mean, it took the flesh off these guys. It got hot real fast.
Wow.
And the Sheik had some medical complications from the match. He got some serious heat exhaustion, and I think he had to be hospitalized.
So yesterday I saw an article, the 15 worst booking decisions ever. This match that you just described was not on there. Should it have been?
Yes. Because whoever, they just didn't think it through. I think it became more than they thought it was going to be. I think that they thought it would be that those flames would burn, but not that the ring would engulf in flames. Clearly, they didn't think.
We're definitely, as soon as we're done recording this episode, that's the first thing I'm watching.
You want to see that?
Just so you know.
Well, how many matches you got left?
I got two more things that I want to talk about.
Well, how about this? Let me do mine,
yeah,
and then I'll shut up and let you do yours, and I'll just interject as you talk.
Yeah.
Does that work for you?
Because awesome.
In 1992, Randy Savage had an idea that he could do like a good 2-year program with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
And this was his intention to, first of all, get himself a nice 2-year program with a guy that he looked at and said, I can have good matches with him.
Right.
And ultimately, he would have put Shawn Michaels over. And that would have been his swan song.
Right.
That he brought Shawn Michaels to the main event level.
Yeah.
That's not what WWE wanted to do.
Right.
And they wanted to scale back his involvement. But during the interim in 92, he took the title for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
From after Flair won it, they kind of swapped it back and forth. And in the process, they went over to Germany, and he had a couple of matches with Shawn Michaels. So on the Randy Savage DVD, you can get and see one of these. Did I ever bring you that so you could watch it?
No, is it on the the documentary is on the network.
But yeah, but the matches are not. I don't know if this match may be on the network. I don't know. I never searched for it.
Okay.
But it's great. Randy Savage comes out selling a leg injury.
Mm-hmm.
He limps to the ring, and Shawn Michaels works his leg the entire match.
Yeah.
And he sells the leg injury the entire match up to the elbow drop finish where he climbs the rope with one leg.
Oh, wow.
And drops the elbow. But there's a spot early on that I like, though, before I get to that, where Savage flips out and goes out, and he throws the chair. And he throws it into the ring. And Sean Mooney, who I thought was awful,
yes,
makes the statement, it's not like Savage to do something like that. And I'm thinking, first of all, his name's Savage. Second of all, have you ever seen one of his matches? Because it's absolutely like Savage.
That's exactly right.
Babyface or heel, he was nuts. He was always nuts. That was his gimmick, was that he was living.
That wasn't even a gimmick sometimes.
Right. He was living on a razor's edge. Kevin Sullivan talks about him. I talked about him being paranoid last time. Kevin Sullivan said, you could walk by Randy Savage 100 times and say, how you doing today, Randy? Sure, the weather's nice outside. And he'd go, yep, it sure is, 99 times. But 100 on that 100th time, he'd say, what do you mean by that? That he was just that kind of guy. He was intense.
Yeah.
He lived that gimmick, man. He was a nut.
Yeah.
So to say that he wouldn't throw a chair, I just thought, that's why Sean Mooney doesn't work there anymore.
Right. Hey, High Spots TV, great Memphis.
Yeah, they have a lot of the Paphos.
Yes.
The Paphos promotion.
Well worth the is it $10.99 or $9.99?
$9.99.
Well worth it just to watch. We watched Randy Savage and Bob Orton cut a promo.
Yeah.
That was just great.
So then later.
That's all I had to add.
No, I'm glad you did. That's true because most of Randy Savage's run in Memphis is on High Spots TV.
Yeah.
Not the stuff he did with USWA, but still.
Yeah.
There's a great spot where Sherry Martel climbs up on the ring apron, and she's got high heels on. And they do the spot where Savage goes over and he kind of grabs her, and Shawn Michaels hits the ropes and he's going to plow into Savage from behind. Savage jumps out of the way. Michaels hits Sherry, and she goes flying back about 5 feet with high heels on and hits the ground and rolls, and she's up a minute later when Michaels is back on having the heat again, and she's wrapping Savage's leg around the ring post, you know, the spot where they take him and wrap it around. She's up a minute later, and it reminded me of Lana at WrestleMania, who orchestrated making sure she had her shoes off before she took her bump, where she took a shoe off and threw it at John Cena for no reason. It made no sense. When I knew when she took that shoe off and flung it across the ring, she's fixing to take a bump. She's afraid to do it in high heels.
Yeah.
So then she does, and then she has to take the other one off. Then she takes kind of a, it was a good bump. I mean, I have to give her credit because she's good. I'm not knocking her. She's good at what she does. And she's gorgeous. What?
On Facebook the other day, they were talking about just how she was from Russia.
Oh, God, stupid people. I think she's from Nashville.
Oh, no, they were saying, oh, no, she's really, no, she was born in Russia.
Yeah, well, listen. Dookie might taste like pumpkin pie, but I'll never know.
But when, I can't remember if it was somebody in the room or one of the announcers, when she threw that heel at John Cena, somebody said, Lana's going heel.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. But anyway, my point was, Lana takes the shoes off to take the bump. She sells it for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They have to help her back to the dressing room. Sherry takes the bump in high heels.
Yeah.
And then she's back up a minute later.
She was great.
Right back in the match. And she, I guarantee you, in a real fight, could beat up half of that WWE locker room today. I just thought Sherry was – and she's somebody that I have the appreciation for now. I just think she's great.
Can you just do real quick your impersonation of Robert of the Stud Stable when he was when he was in love with her?
I don't know that I can.
Come on, man. Is that going to get you – I don't want to get you out of the mood.
No, you're not. It's
that young.
That young woman. She has stole my heart. And Jean, I can't go on until I tell her how I feel. Okay. I'm smitten with that young lady.
Thank you. I'm just grinding the organ.
Ain't no telling how you're going to take that out of context. What you going to have me saying now? But anyway, they did the match. Then Savage won with the elbow drop. Yeah. Obviously, he's the champion. But it was just kind of, you see what could have been.
Right.
The feud that could have been between, because it is a really good match. And the psychology of the match with selling the leg injury and then Michaels working the leg. And then when the match is over, Savage just shouldn't have won the match, but he did win the match, and then they attack him. And I've heard, and I don't know, so if I'm wrong about this, please, somebody let me know.
Yeah.
My understanding is there were follow-up matches to this that played because they were still doing the European tour where Elizabeth came back and got involved, and it was some of Liz's last appearances in the WWF. That's not on the DVD, and I couldn't find footage of it because I really wanted to watch that. My understanding is that at some point on this European tour, Elizabeth got involved and it was she counteracted Sherry being there.
Right.
But I loved Sherry Martel still when she's on TV, when she was with Harlem Heat or whether she was Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels.
I forgot she had been with Shane Douglas too.
Yeah.
That's one of the matches we'll talk about from 94. Yeah.
Whoever she was with, she enhanced them. She very much held her own, but never stole the spotlight.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
She got the role of what – Bobby Heenan is the greatest manager of all time, but Bobby Heenan overshadowed his talent a lot of times.
Right.
He was the one that was over, and the talent was over due to their association with Bobby Heenan.
And that's why they put
People with Bobby Heenan. Exactly. Yeah. But he, when it wasn't Nick Bockwinkel and Ray Stevens who could hold their own, which it was one of the greatest acts in wrestling history. I talk about it all the time. Stevens and Bockwinkel and Heenan, the Heenan family, one of the greatest acts in wrestling history.
When you watch late, and I haven't watched enough of it, how did the AWA go out of business? They had some of the, I mean, Vince.
Well, they had Rick Martel.
This I'm talking about before Rick
Martel. No, you're right. Well, they were doing good for a while. AWA was a big territory, man. Right. They lost Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's where they, if they had kept Hulk Hogan, Vern Gagne messed up, man. He tried to take some of Hogan's money from Japan, and they were selling Hulk Hogan t-shirts and not giving him any of the money. And that just created a rift between the two of them. But if they had treated Hulk Hogan right, he was a star in the AWA too.
Right.
That territory was getting hot. Don't be misunderstood. Not because of the Gagne's. That territory was getting hot because Hulk Hogan was there.
And they kept teasing him beating Bockwinkel. Yes. They kept teasing it and kept
And had
it.
He stayed there, Hulk Hogan was going to be a star. Especially after Rocky came out, because now everybody knows who he is. Yeah. Rocky III was a big movie. So that's where they dropped the ball, I think, was losing Hogan. And they just never recovered. And they tried to make Greg Gagne a soldier and He might have been a tough guy. He might have had some amateur wrestling credentials. I don't know. His father did. That doesn't mean that he does.
I said it on Facebook the other day. If I'm Greg Gagne and my dad owns the company and he never puts the world title on me, I'm not sending him a Christmas card.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly, he's gonna push his kid. But, but I think that was the big misstep was losing Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, yeah. Just... Hey, talk about, we're talking about Shawn Michaels, somebody who really kind of started coming into his own in AWA. And
yeah, if
and
you want to, speaking of bloody matches, the Rockers versus Buddy Rose, who was it? Golly.
Buddy Rose and Doug Summers.
There you go, Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. I couldn't think of the other guy's name.
Yep.
I'm proud of you.
Well, thanks.
It's not like I didn't know. I just couldn't. The name
Listen,
slipped my
you
mind.
You got so many things on your mind today, Mark. Anything I can do to make your life a little easier today, whether it's supplying you, setting you up for a punchline, whether it's setting you up to take a jab at me, whatever I provide, Doug Summers, whatever I can do. I see it. What's one right. I'm a servant. I'm a
got a servant of the people.
A servant of the people. That's right.
All right, well, I'm done, so you go ahead and bore everybody now.
So we talked about...
You didn't
even
catch that, did you? You didn't hear what I said?
I didn't, because I was trying to read my writing. We talked about Sherry Martel. That leads into the match I want to share. Survivor Series 1992, November 25th, the main event, Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart for the world title. It's champion versus champion. Shawn Michaels, the Intercontinental Champion at the time. Now, I did not watch. I just watched this match from the pay-per-view. Couple of things. HBK comes out, and by now you know his song. Is that Sherry Martel singing that song? So that's my segue from Sherry Martel. I thought Shawn Michaels couldn't sing.
I know it. It's awful, man.
It's
pretty brutal.
Terrible.
It's terrible. El Terrible.
But at this point in time,
which Shawn means the terrible.
The terrible. Shawn Michaels is playing the heel. He cuts a good promo with the guy, Shawn Mooney. But then Mean Gene interviews Bret Hart. Now, I always loved Mean Gene, and I'm not trying to knock him. But I try, and I do this sometimes when I'm interviewing people. You ask the question, you're trying to ask a question, and you get to a good stopping point where you can ask the question, but then you give some details that almost answer the question, and then you ask the question.
And I don't mean this, but as the interviewer, sometimes I see what you're saying. There's a climax to every story. And if you give the climax away in the answer, then I can't build to the climax. And I'm not talking about me and you specifically, but is that what you mean? when you give the climax away in your question, then you've taken my ability away to build to the climax and answer your question in an entertaining way.
Yeah, not necessarily giving away the climax. So it'd be something like this. So Mark, you know, won't you kind of tell me who your favorite team in the SEC is? I know you've talked about Kentucky, and then list all the teams from the SEC.
Right.
And say, Mark, you've talked about that.
And the only one you don't name is Vanderbilt.
Right. So which is your favorite? And right. I tell you everything you've said about these.
Right.
The funny thing, the two things I wanted to bring up about this interview that I, and this is just the way I watch wrestling, is they've been building up to this whole match is that Bret Hart is a fighting champion. And this is his first run with the belt.
Not only is this his first run with the belt, this is his first pay-per-view title defense.
Yeah, because he won the belt in Saskatchewan or whatever. Yeah. I can't.
Saskatoon or Saskatchewan?
Saskatoon,
I think.
Scoochamada.
Yeah, I remember that was, and I've talked about it before. I found a videotape with that match on it where he beats Flair for the title.
Yeah.
There again, there's a reason it wasn't. Anyway, because it's not a good match.
Right.
It was flat.
But they've been talking about that Bret Hart has been a fighting champion. He's defended the belt more times and that he's been doing it against the best competition. And then here's who they list. You've defended against the Mountie, the Berserker, Papa Shango. And then he says somebody, Virgil, as if, okay, that's what you got there. But then Bret Hart says, it's one of the most profound things I've ever heard a wrestler say. And I'm sorry that I didn't think of this. Bret Hart says, Thanksgiving is the most special day for giving thanks.
And you said to yourself, oh, where'd you park your squad car, Dick Tracy? It's like Peggy Hill on King of the Hill would say, the day after Thanksgiving is, in my opinion, one of the busiest shopping days of the year. It's not your opinion. It's a fact.
Bret Hart gets a great pop. I mean, he is over. Like, this is kind of what people have been wanting. It's been building to that. You know, his character has faced that natural progression.
Right.
He was a tag team guy. He's paid his dues. He's been the great Intercontinental champ. And so the fans have been waiting for this. This match, in my opinion, better than their Iron Man match.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, it's a really good match.
It's about a 30-minute match.
At the time, worth the mistrust is not there.
No,
at
right.
At this
right.
time between the two of them.
Now, again, I just watched this match. Just from what I've read about what other people said about the match, the rest of the pay-per-view brought this match down. Like right. people that were live there said, this is a great match. But because it followed a bunch of crap, it's kind of a downer. But thank goodness, the network, you can go to those dots and just watch this. And listen, don't just watch the match. Watch the interviews before.
Right.
This is, to me, what could have been
with
these two guys.
This match right here and previous Intercontinental title matches, but this match is what led to a lot of the problems between the two of them. Hmm. Because Shawn Michaels had spent the better part of several years putting Bret Hart over to build him as the Intercontinental Champion. And then Bret goes on and wins the TV or the world title. And Shawn now graduates to winning the world, to winning the Intercontinental title. And that was the progression of things. And then after all these years of putting Bret Hart over to make him look like this great champion, when it was time for Bret Hart to do the favor to Shawn Michaels, he didn't want to do it. Mm. Bret Hart has very much painted himself as the victim in this situation.
Right.
And he's gone a lot to a lot. And I'm a Bret Hart fan.
Right.
But he was not the victim in the – it was 50-50 now. To hear anybody talk about Shawn Michaels, he wasn't always easy to deal with. But when a guy has spent 5 or 6 years – making you look like $1 million in the ring,
yeah,
and putting you over, it's not unacceptable for them to say, okay, now we need you to do him the favor and, yeah, make him look like he's finally good enough to beat you.
Yeah.
That was not an unreasonable request of Bret Hart,
yeah,
to ask him to do that.
You know, as looking back on this match, what was refreshing and shocking at the same time, this is pre-tap out days.
Yes.
Is Shawn Michaels comes off the top rope. I can't remember if it was like with a flying drop kick, but Bret kind of knocks him down, throws him in the sharpshooter, and within 10 seconds, this match is over.
Yeah.
Back then, the power of the finisher still was there, of all finishers.
Yeah.
If you got hit, it was a there are no finishers anymore. Would you say that? Am I wrong in saying that?
I see what you're saying.
There
definitely are finishers. I mean, but it's not guaranteed that when you hit your finish, the match is over. Is that what you mean? Whereas back then, most of the time, Austin got you with a stunner, the match was over.
So, all right. So think about what you just said. Okay. That when you're hit with a finisher, the match is over. So if I hit you with a move and the match is not over, that move's not a finisher.
Right. It's a finish for when you hit Cesaro with it. Right. But it may not be a finish when you hit John Cena with it.
Right. And so I wish we could go back to...
I just think WWE has this idea that what makes a great match is kicking out each other's finish five times. And right, the reason that I think they have that idea is because I've been watching it for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
And I know that in their mind... that's their storytelling device. It's not hit all these other big moves.
It's hit you.
And then hit your finish and it's over. It's hit your, like in Japan.
Right.
You hit everybody else's big move.
Right, right.
And it's not over. And then you hit your move and it's over.
Yeah.
But in WWE, it's how you kick out of three RKOs and then I'll kick out of three F5s. And yeah, then somebody will hit the fifth one and we'll,
yeah,
or not even somebody will hit a finish. We'll have somebody come out and interfere,
yeah,
and distract somebody. And then they'll hit me with a briefcase and then I'll win.
Like
it's that kind of thing. You know, that's their idea of of how to tell a great wrestling story. And I don't agree with
it. Like AJ Styles has several signature moves, the Pele kick, different moves like that. But when he hits you, I've never seen anybody kick out of the Styles Clash.
Right.
Like when he, and that's what's so special about that move is like when he even teases putting you in it, number one, you think,
I hope you don't break my
neck. Yeah, I hope you don't break my neck. And
tuck the chin. That's what I'm thinking. Tuck your chin.
But anyway, one of the notes on the, one of the notes that the Wrestling Observer had on this Bret Hart Shawn Michaels match was just that I guess they were talking to different people, and Kevin Sullivan was like, man, that's the best match I've seen in several years. And Kevin Sullivan would know because he had seen a lot of bad matches in WCW. Yeah,
that's true.
But
a lot of good matches, too.
That's right. So this final one that I want to talk about is not a match, but the feud of the year, voted on by the readers of the Wrestling Observer for 1992, was the Moondogs versus Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Lawler. Let me say a couple of things. This is, you know, USWA. So the link that I'm going to put up on YouTube is the aftermath of a match. But it was supposed to be Robert Fuller and Jeff Jarrett versus the Moondogs. And I think the Moondogs manager is Richard Lee. He brings a loaded trash can to the ring, and this brawl breaks out. And Mark gave us a great history lesson on the Tupelo, Mississippi concession stand brawl, on how there was a match in Mississippi with Harlem Heat and somebody, and they tried to rekindle that. And this, the original angle, saved the territory, and then they killed the gimmick.
Right.
So you got to go back and watch this because it's like you're watching. it's like you're watching this real fight break out in a school gym.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you, I mean, it's one of those things you're watching and like, man, I think they're really fighting. And that's when you're hooked, because you know they're not. But there is stuff flying everywhere, garbage flying everywhere. They're hitting each other with. Now, let me. Once you've seen the original.
Yeah, most things pale in comparison. Anytime they tried to redo that particular angle, it paled.
So I want to ask you this. And I don't. Jerry Jarrett. He's booking USD. He's the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a attempt by a father who?
Yes. Right,
okay. I want to get my son over, so I'm going to put him with the guy, Jerry
mm-hmm.
Lawler,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to put him in this angle that we haven't done in a couple of years, and right. now we're going to.
Right.
I'm right in assuming. Yes. I'm right.
I think you probably are. Yes, I think you probably are. Yeah, that was their whole deal. Was let's get Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah,
I've talked about it a month or two ago.
He got the Roman Reigns.
That's
treatment.
Why TNA was started to yeah. make everybody think Jeff Jarrett was a big national star, and he's not.
Yeah,
he's just not.
No,
and he's never gonna be. He never was.
I will say this. This is my favorite thing of Jeff Jarrett that I've ever watched.
Yeah.
He bleeds from the arm. They're bleeding everywhere. They go into the concession stand. You got to watch this just for the announcing. Whoever's announcing this, I don't even know. I don't know if it's the accent or his tone. I was like, he says it more. He says it like 100 times. Where? Kennett, Missouri, American Legion. Oh my goodness. This is USWA. Woo! Hee-hoo! I mean, it's kind of like the Vince McMahon of that time. We're like, oh, yeah. You know, just I'm getting carried away doing it.
I'm telling you, boy.
But the crowd kind of gathers around. Nobody's sitting down. Everybody has come to that side of the gym and kind of squared it off. Just great. Great to watch. Again, it's not even a match. There's not even a finish. It's just four guys who don't like each other.
Settling the score.
Yeah, just fighting. And then later on in the year, I mean, this is January. Later on in the year, there's an angle where Richard Lee is hurt. And for one night only, Jerry Lawler is going to manage the Moondogs. And I'm looking for that to try to see how all that played out. But I'm hooked on Jerry Lawler. He, you know, one of his matches I'm going to talk about in 90. You know, so he was too. One guy that growing up, I just for some reason didn't like him.
Uh-huh.
But I've really grown to appreciate him. The Memphis Heat documentary. Just, oh, golly.
He's got a new DVD set coming out here soon, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
I hate that the current generation only sees him as
the dirty old man on Raw.
Yeah, the dirty old man announcer.
Yeah, I do too, because and when we get to 93, I got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Well, that's coming up on the next episode. Any other thoughts on any of these matches or anything in general? Good night. We've colored. We've covered racism and religion and all sorts of things in this episode at no extra charge.
That's right.
At no extra charge to you, the listening audience. So we've given you our list. This is just matches from 1992. That we think you should go back and watch. It'd be worth your time to go back and check out. Now, the first match we shared was a coal miner's glove match between Sting and Jake Roberts. That was on another episode, because that episode you got to go listen to. Yeah. That is that's the one that's going to win an Oscar for us or whatever.
Do they give Oscars for podcasts?
They just had the podcast awards out in, I guess that's in
How
Vegas.
Did we not get invited?
Next year, we're going to set the ballot.
It's all Steve Austin and Jim Ross.
No, I mean, it's like they don't even win. I mean, it's
Adam
like
Carolla.
Maine. Yeah, stuff like that. So yeah. we're going to – next year, I am going to pay more attention to the podcast awards and whatever we got to do to put ourselves over in that category. We can
submit that one.
We're going to do that.
Yeah, that is, I can just already tell, one of my favorite episodes ever.
Yeah.
Because it was great. It was great.
If you want to hear two 40-year-old men laughing uncontrollably and can't regain their composure to the point where they just end the episode, yeah, that's the one. It was so, I'm telling you, you know, in my, listen, let me just shoot with you. In my life situation, the things that I face, there are days, and I'm just being honest, all right? There are days where I get to the end of the day and I think, this day probably took 3 years off my life. Just stuff I'm facing. This, you know, my wife is sick. So this is an album. That episode added 5 years to my life. Well, because yeah, I laugh so much. And that's, listen, maybe nobody's even listening to this. Maybe they're not going to put this episode on the Mars rover and some aliens going to listen to Chuck Berry and the Double Dropkick Show. But hey, it does my soul good. I hope it does your soul good. Don't just listen to the show. Interact with us. Mark, I don't know if you know this. We got a Facebook group.
We do.
Why don't you tell everybody about our Facebook group?
It's full of the greatest wrestling fans in the world. The wrestling you grew up with.
Yeah.
And the next time I post something about Kevin Sullivan,
oh,
and somebody tries to turn it into a deal about the Chris Benoit thing, I'm telling you, I'm kicking you out of the group. I'm not even going to bring it up. Yeah. I'm not giving nobody. This is the warning.
Yeah.
If I put something up about that I want to share, ain't nobody hijacking my post.
I apologize.
It happened one time, yeah, and I let it happen. If it happens again, I'm kicking them out of the group, and I'm not going to give them any warning.
Can I just say that if you want to expound on your theories why Kevin Sullivan was involved in the Chris Benoit murders, ours is not the group to do that in. We like to keep it.
You are not going to, in our wrestling group, accuse somebody of murder when you don't.
No.
You are not going to do that.
No.
You will not do it. Not, I will kick you out of the group.
Not when your basic, not when your number one evidence is a drawing that a psychic did.
Yeah. That is not compelling enough evidence for me. I'm sorry.
I think I
speak, this psychic drew a picture.
I think,
I don't care.
I think I speak for all of us when I say, hey, you're full of crap, sir.
That's right.
Listen, we let you listen. We got a guy who posts different pictures every day and just people's birthday.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
I mean, he doesn't do it 50 times a day, 48, 49, but you know.
He can do it however many times he wants to.
People ask questions. You know, I do have to. The grammar nerd inside of me, I have to put him to sleep a lot. I love
it. When I get a text from you and there's some grammatical errors in it, I love that. It's one of my favorite things.
That's when I do the talk to text. I was doing talk to text.
Sure it is.
If you get a typed text message.
Well, that makes sense because you can't talk. For a guy who makes his living flapping his gums, it's rough listening to you string a couple of sentences together sometimes.
So, hey, come on our Facebook group. At the point proven. Hey, and you can write as much as you want on our Facebook group. If you can keep it under 140 characters, right, you can come on Twitter.
You come all you want. We don't.
You can use the hashtag.
You can come at home. You can.
You can use the hashtag marking out, and we'll put your question on the show. For Mark, you can tweet me at Heath Mulliken. I know you're not going to tweet me, but
you can copy me, him.
Just mention me when you ask Mark a question about wrestling. And Mark, where can they ask you a question?
At the DDK show.
So I got 10 notifications the other day. Oh, yeah. hey, at the DDK show. At Heath Mulliken. You know, I have watched some wrestling before.
Yeah,
you
recently.
go to doubledropkick.com. That's where you can find all our episodes. We've written a couple of articles.
I have watched some. Somebody ask Heath the question.
No.
Make his day.
Listen.
Somebody ask Heath the question, then he'll send me a text to get the answer, and I'll tell him what to say, and he'll tweet back to you. Listen, there's a reason we do it question time with Mark and not question time with Heath.
Mark, I got a question for you. What is a body, Donna? So, if you've got an iPhone, you can download us on the podcast app. Stitcher Radio is on all the major platforms. We're now on TuneIn Radio, which, again, all the major platforms. Downloading the episode, not just merely listening to it, downloading it does help us, you know, once we make it big and can charge for advertising. And listen, I don't have to explain myself to you. Just download the episode. And if you could go on iTunes and leave us a rating and a review, it will take you literally 60 seconds to do that. You can do that from your computer. Just go to iTunes, and you can do all that. But anyway, we want to talk wrestling with you. We don't want to rehash. Listen, we're not miserable wrestling fans. You know why? Because we actually like wrestling. We're not people just parading, acting like wrestling fans. Listen, if all they ever talk about wrestling is bad, about how much they hate wrestling, they're not a wrestling fan. They're just a jerk.
Yeah, I just try to find something I like.
Yeah. And there's
like Lucha Underground.
Lucha Underground. We're sold on that, correct?
Oh, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I've watched
I'm enjoying it.
Most of the first episode. I gotta catch up the season finale.
It doesn't take much to sell you on something, does it?
If Mark is sold, whatever Mark's buying, I'm buying.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept for a show.
It is.
It really is.
And it is truly a TV show.
It is, and that it takes some getting used to.
And I'm a big...
but I like, if you're going to do a backstage segment, go ahead and overly produce it. Because I don't believe that anybody has, like, a few months ago when they had their big business meeting on Raw and they all stood facing the same direction looking at the camera to have their business
right.
meeting. I've been in a lot of business meetings and we typically sit around a table to do it.
Yeah.
Or we stand around in a circle to do it.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody standing in no straight line looking ahead at the camera.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have backstage segments, go ahead and overly produce them and make them look like a TV show.
Can I ask, if you're at the building all day, and maybe they do on Raw, but why not pre-record and overly produce?
They do. Most of those backstage segments, if I'm not mistaken, are not live. Yeah, they're most of them are done.
Sorry, I'm a mark.
Yeah, I know. They don't record those. They don't do that live. All that stuff. That's why they have to be there early.
Then
is a TV show. Believe
that makes it even worse. And you know who I blame? I blame Matt Kevin Dunn.
Yeah, because you could do this. Now, actually, that is his fault.
Right.
You want to blame Kevin Dunn for something,
yeah.
Blame him for that, because that kind of stuff is his fault. He is the director of the show. Vince McMahon's the guy who controls the talent.
Yeah.
But Kevin Dunn's the guy that controls what you see on television a lot of times.
Can I make a suggestion to Kevin Dunn? As I've gone back and watched some of these Japanese shows, one thing that I really liked is they'll do a overhead angle from the corner.
Uh-huh.
I love, there's just different angles.
And they shoot from a different angle. And I think, and I've heard other people say this, and from my understanding is he's a Vince McMahon guy. Mm. And that Triple H and Stephanie are not big fans of his. Mm. And that it's basically whenever Vince steps down, Kevin Dunn will be gone too. And you probably will see the TV show take on a different kind of look.
Mm.
So we'll see. I wish Vince McMahon would step down. I'll be honest with you. I do. I think it's time for him to go and let them try and see what they can do.
I mean, the man, he's 70 years old.
Yes. Go hug your grandkids, Vince.
Yeah, just go enjoy it. Listen, Vince, thank you.
Yes, not going to knock him, but man, go.
Oh, I mean, we do our fair share of hating on Vince, But listen, people that hate on him, next time you turn on wrestling, you send him a thank you card. Because
I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
I got his address. Hey, by the way, I'd sent in my ballot for the shareholder. This episode's coming out. We're recording it before the April 23rd WWE shareholders meeting. And if you want to know all about all their meetings, good night. I have a binder of, or I got a big old leaflet of all their minutes of their meetings. And it is fascinating. And for all you people, well, I want to go back to the way it used to be. Listen, they ain't going back. No. This is a whole new world. And if you listen, if you don't like it, you need to get off.
Yeah.
It ain't changing for you.
No, they're not changing.
You can chant singing stuff all you want.
There is some speculation that with adding Raw or adding SmackDown to Sci-Fi, that
or
part
to
of
USA.
The USA. To USA, that part of the deal might have been they'll be getting 4 hours of programming to trim Raw back to two. Now, I don't know that that's true.
How awesome would that be?
But I have heard that speculation that that might have been part of the deal. We move SmackDown over here, and we can cut back to, you know.
It is pretty cool.
I personally don't think that's going to happen. I just think it's an hour's worth. It's millions of dollars. We're not. Right. Yeah. We're getting – this is – man, ad time on shows that draw the kind of ratings, even when the ratings are not incredible, they're still bad. There's – shows that would love to have a rating that Raw gets.
Yeah. So can we talk about, listen, it's our show. We're going to talk about. So you talk about ad time. As we have been hearing about the issues with TNA, again, we're recording this on April 16th, where Taz just left yesterday. The issue I heard was he was supposed to go to do some voiceovers last weekend. He was supposed to fly somewhere. He had not received his check. He said, if I don't get my check, I ain't going. And
kudos. Taz is not a mark for the bit.
No.
Taz is a mark for money. I respect that.
Absolutely.
We talked about it. If the company I work for stops paying me, I stop going to work.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it because it's my hobby.
Yeah.
He ain't going to do voiceover work for them because it's a hobby for him. That's his job.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay him, don't get mad at him for not coming to work.
But you talked about ad time. I think it says a couple of things. It says something that USA is saying, we want more wrestling. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But one of the issues I've heard, two issues I've heard with Destination America is they are being very proactive in TNA saying, hey, we like Kurt Angle. We like 47 with a bad neck. We'd like for him to be the champion because he's, you know, and hey, you know, we're Destination America. And even though you're very popular in the UK, we don't want you taping your TV show in the UK. Tyron Terrell, we think she's hot. We want her to be the champ. The other thing is Destination America brings on Impact Wrestling thinking ad money.
Right.
I have not watched one. I just got Destination America last week. So I've taped one episode of Impact that I'm going to go back and watch. Uh-huh. Because I heard somebody say, you know, the ad money just hadn't been there like they thought.
Right.
Like TNA oversold themselves. Like, oh, yeah, we got these advertisers.
Actually had those advertisers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because Spike was a bigger and better brand than TNA.
And Destination America.
But if somebody told me, just go back and watch the episode, and when you see the ads they have, you'll understand.
It's like McGee, Heaton, and Air. Something
like that. Listen, I was going to make fun of, you know.
Maybe we can get some ad time on TNA. Wonder how much that would cost.
They might be giving it away for
free. I'm not sure that anybody'd see it.
All I know is at the end of
it. And I want them to do well. I don't ever want anybody to mistake. I want them. There's nothing would make me happier if they got as big as WCW. Nothing would make me happier.
But they're not going to get that big copying.
No.
WWF.
You've got to do something different. Look at Lucha Underground. They're doing something completely different than what anybody else is doing, and it's working.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, let me tell you what is possible. Now, El Rey, the viewership for Lucha Underground, the legal viewership of people who watch it on El Rey is under 100,000, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
But Mark Burnett is the producer. He produces Survivor. Mark.
And Robert Rodriguez.
Right.
Executive producer. Who,
these guys.
And by the way, if you've never watched the El Rey Network, it is great. Uh-huh. It is incredible, man. I don't it's have not. That it's not at all what you think.
You get it
on
Sling TV,
it
right?
Is, yeah, it's not Galavision. It is a grindhouse movie channel. Really? They have Kung Fu Thursdays.
Oh yeah.
They show old 60s and 70s and 80s horror movies. They have interviews with directors like Quentin Tarantino and George Carpenter. I love the El. Now they got this one stupid show about guys who cut hair, and they cut like I want to remember back when we were kids. Yeah. I want Michael Jordan's number in my head. Yeah. And they do that kind of stuff, and it's stupid. And yeah, they'll run marathons, and I can't stand that. But yes, I signed up for Sling TV pretty much, and I can watch Lucha Underground. But, because the only reason I did it was because HBO is, you have to have Apple. They got a 3-month exclusive contract with Apple for HBO on demand. So I can't get it yet, but you could get it if you got Sling TV.
You're right.
You got the on demand library as part of the deal. So I went ahead and signed up for it because trust me, it gets old trying to find something to watch on Netflix, but I don't want cable because it's way too much money. But Sling TV is $20 a month.
Yeah, and I didn't realize El Rey was on Sling TV.
Yeah, it's like El Rey, TNT, TBS, A&E. It's 20 channels.
Okay.
And then HBO was an extra couple of bucks.
But make no mistake, this show is on El Rey to get its foot in the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Their end goal is can you imagine if Lucha Underground could get a Friday night spot? And I'm not saying CBS. Now, CBS, NBC, ABC, they're not wanting the old wrestling, but a produced television show like Lucha Underground. I'm not saying
it's going to be NBC, but.
Right. You know. Correct. I don't know. Hey, who knows what?
That's the problem. The NBC owns a lot of the major
channels.
Listen,
there's ain't but three media companies in the whole world.
But Lucha Underground is great. El Rey Network's great. I love old kung fu movies and horror movies and stuff. So
I'm
addicted to this channel now because I can just cut it on and keep it in the background.
Yeah,
which is how I watch most TV. I don't sit around.
And that's how a lot of people listen to the Double Dropkick Show. Listen to it in the background. Listen to it on your commute. I don't care when you listen to it, as long as you listen to it. And while you're listening to it, you take your mouse. It's got a little clicker on there. You hover over a banner and then
click on that banner.
So as always, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Double Dropkick Show. As always, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.